And I think that's one of the things when you talk about, you know, people putting up walls and not giving second chances. Mm-hmm. Our friend Joanne brings history with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that...
That's because she's old. Was that my outside voice?
Marion brings history with her.
I'm old too. I can be up there. I'm old too.
And in their community, you find so much discussion around ageism.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I know on the liaison committee, we had members on the liaison committee who were there forever.
Yeah.
And when we tried to bring youth in, it was just butting heads in terms of the language.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember in the day when I sat in a room at the Ontario Sexual Assault Committee, and we were talking about whether we were going to call ourselves queer or lesbians. And I mean, that was like a 2.5
that was
hour.
Huge.
That was a 2.5 hour meeting, and
that
no was decision
huge.
Was made.
Yes.
Because I was the lesbian.
Yeah.
And you're not going to tell me I'm queer.
It was interesting because people often ask me, why do I say GLBT? I mean, it's because of the liaison committee. And they were like, why does the liaison committee have GLBT, not LGBT? I'm like, well, when feminism really got a bit ramped up, they switched the L and the G.
Yeah.
And that's what that was. Mm-hmm. But the liaison committee could never agree to it at all, so they haven't evolved since like the...
It's also, it's a gown versus town problem as well, because if you go on... If you speak to people who've not been to university for gender studies and who haven't been involved in activism and who haven't been involved in pride movements
they
or anything like that.
They just take it up the butt. Like that's,
well,
you know.
Gay is the generic term for everyone.
It absolutely is.
I've known lesbians, bisexuals. I've even known trans people who identify as gay, who say they're gay, and then when you press them for details, they're like, well, I mean, if you want to get technical about it, I'm a... pansexual agender, but whatever, I'm gay. And it's this really, but you know what I'm saying though, like they're gay is the sort of more old-fashioned queer.
Yeah.
And the I know when I was at McMaster, one of the reasons why they stuck with GLBT, I think they've actually switched it since then, but when I was there volunteering for their center, they stuck with GLBT because a lot of people, when they do internet searches, they look up gay.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it had to do with being accessible to the public, where if you're not an academic, if you're not an activist, if you're not politically involved, and you don't know the acronyms, and you don't know all the magic terminology...
And you just say gay.
A lot of people just use the term gay.
Yeah.
Now it's becoming a little bit more common, because like if you're looking at younger people and you do have... gay straight alliances in high schools, like people have more access to the gender theory that goes behind it, and it's become a little bit more common. It's, you know, sometimes people talk about it on the news, whereas if you're looking at people sort of over the age of maybe 30, gay was the catch-all term. And so GLBT for the longest time was the catch-all term because it starts with gay, which is, you know, a lot of people look up under gay.
Right.
Our former roommate, strictly speaking, she was mostly lesbian.
Yeah.
And for the longest, like, it took us forever to figure it out.
We'll come back.
She identified as lesbian, and then after a while, I found out that she had ex-boyfriends. Then I was like, oh, so you're mostly lesbian. And she had never had adverbs applied to identities before. And one of her friends, he couldn't pin down what he felt, and so he was usually straight. And when I said that to him, he was like, that is exactly what I am. And it was it was this really interesting... But do you know what I'm saying, though? Usually...
No. Mostly lesbian.
Mostly
because she'd had boyfriends in the past.
Yes.
Well, I had many boyfriends growing up, I had two marriages and five children.
She was bisexual, but lesbian-leaning.
By now, gay later.
She was also, if you were to look at her,
would she date men now, or would she only date women now?
Well, she's currently dating a man.
Oh, she's currently dating a man.
And she's also, if you're to look at her, to be frank, quite dykey.
Oh yeah, she wears plaid.
Yeah,
like she owns no other clothing.
Well, that's another discussion.
So funny story,
and she gets half
is the in thing.
So we didn't see each other. It's true. We haven't seen each other in so long.
It's meant to be a crisscross. Have you ever seen a tablecloth that was not a crisscross pattern of some kind? If it's not plaid, it's gingham or something else. I mean, it's...
So
tablecloths are meant to be crisscross patterns.
We hadn't seen each other in a very long time. And it's actually where we were discussing the idea of having this show. And we're at the 25th anniversary of the Liaison Committee. And we're talking about fighting stereotypes. And I can't remember what I said or what I did. No, I identified a colour. That was it. And we were having a debate as whether or not something was like deep burgundy or maroon. And we couldn't decide on a shade of a colour. And it was we mentioned that I'm not really fighting stereotypes. And then I mentioned that you were literally wearing a plaid jacket.
And I came home and you said, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. It's a stereotype. And I came home and I said to Marian, what's a plaid stereotype?
Yeah.
And so she had to explain it to me. It is a plaid stereotype, yeah.
Wasn't aware of it, were you?
Oh, really?
I don't know how you came through the 80s without that.
Yeah.
When I first came out, I wore plaid, I cut my hair, I stopped wearing makeup because I thought, well, that's not what lesbians do. It took me years to start reading about butch femme. And,
well, I had
Did you wear loose-fitting jeans and work boots?
Was patchouli your favorite scent?
No, I know what I forbid.
You weren't a patchouli lesbian, okay.
No, I've been married for many years. I came out, I was 33 years old.
Okay.
And I had all my children. My youngest was a year old when I came out, and no, I missed the whole. I didn't get the memo on the patchouli partner wore plaid, so I kind of dressed like she did, but
We know a patchouli lesbian who now lives in St. Catherine.
Yes, we do.
And she's amazing because she's a librarian, very booky. She's also pagan, and just very, very. She's.
What would you say?
She's also engaged to be married.
I'm trying to help Marian. Oh.
But, like, actually,
smelled like patchouli, really, you know. Well. Like, I know where all the dots go.
Let me see, your filing skills are...
Oh, they're pretty darn good, I'll tell you. I know how to flip through a card file.
I feel like I've heard better euphemisms, so I'm just going to put that out there.
All right. I'll work on it.
Anyway, but that's... She was like the epitome of what one would call a patchouli lesbian.
Yes, she absolutely was. Yeah.
Very whimsical. Early 30s, I think.
20s? Early 30s. Oh, please.
Kind of breastfed.
I have socks older than that.
Early 30s is what I'm going to say.
So now there's the question. Where do you go to find a date with an older woman?
Don't
give me plenty of fish and...
No. This is actually a question that I wanted to ask earlier.
Did a year of internet dating. My kids call it my player year. The first woman I met had the same purse as me. That was a disaster. The second woman had a drug issue. It was just one disaster after another. So I won't do that again. Where do you go? What do you do?
Well...
It's not about the sex. You want good sex, you want this, you want that. I don't want any of that. I just want somebody who likes me and who wants to be with me and who wants to spend time and you know, take me on trips in the wintertime.
Me too, but I want the good sex.
Yeah.
No, I could care less about any of that. You reach an age where it's like that's not the be all and end all.
I'm sure.
And I am speaking for myself.
I'm pretty sure it makes a top five though. Like surely
I really could care less.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she's talking about age here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm postmenopausal. I really don't care, but it would be nice to have somebody who cares about me, who wants to date me and woo me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's always nice.
Any suggestions from two young men?
Where would I go to hook up with an older lesbian? Like, I'm going to have to narrow down the options of...
Or if anyone listening...
Yeah. Knows. Tweet us at Velvet Studio 1.
Please call us.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
I'm not bad looking. I'm intelligent. I have great skills.
You're a very good cook.
Absolutely. I'm a great cook. I could be gluten-free if I have to. It would be nice to have, you know,
that's an interesting question.
To spoil me. I want to be spoiled.
Is you? So I like that Ottawa has the Ottawa Senior Pride Network.
Yes.
Because I think community building... That is where you meet people, is in community.
It is also a form of activism. In its own right.
But let's stick to the topic at hand. So I have to do this occasionally with Sebastian.
It's related.
Just rein you in.
Activate me, baby.
So what I like is the sense of community. So for gay men, there is an awful community on mobile dating apps, so Grindr and so on and so forth. And, you know, also like Plenty of Fish and Craigslist. They're all.
For gay men, there is both 1,000 venues and also none of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very. But you can go to Queering 613 events.
Yeah.
That's very heavily weighted towards our range and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It's. And
they do the.
Why don't you do an event? Bring your grandmother.
That actually would be great because it tackles social isolation.
Well, that'd be two of us.
We have grandsons to take us. What are you talking about?
Dude. So,
sorry.
I think you're absolutely speaking to a need in the community where our generation is identifying that mobile apps and the websites, which is where we would go, don't work.
No.
It's impossible to create community that way. Mm-hmm. Like the AIDS blanket would never happen now because we don't have that social really cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Queering 613 and other things are starting to build that up again. But we don't have that at the senior level. Our senior pride network does a little bit, and I'll pass it to you in a second.
No, I'm talking
about Geek Out. Oh, yeah, Geek Out does that as well. but it doesn't. There is a void. And I think that's something that our generation needs to be more cognizant of.
I think a lot of it, though, is a lot of younger people, they look at the internet, and they're like, well, that does the trick. And it really doesn't.
It's like Amazon shopping for penis. It just doesn't.
Did I hear that right?
Yes, you did. Oh.
I was just looking at the microphone and thinking we have never, ever had anything this phallic in our house.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Thank you for sharing.
If you speak to a feminist activist, everything is phallic. Like, have candles everywhere.
Mm.
So, I mean, this is phallic right here.
That's actually a Christmas present for my daughter.
It's beautiful, by the way.
You love that?
Cool. Yeah.
We actually, in our family, we have the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome gene, and the symbol for Ehlers-Danlos is a zebra. So I bought that for my daughter.
So let's explain to the listeners that this is like a zebra carousel of a stick.
It's like a carousel ride. Yes.
Yeah.
And it
is a beautiful piece. I've
noticed
it. It's
5 feet tall.
As soon as I came in.
Yeah.
Well, the pole is 5 feet tall, not the zebra.
Not the zebra itself, right?
Or the zebra.
Oh, right. That's it. Yeah. Zebra crossing.
So what would you say in terms of community? Like for older women?
The senior service, the senior network, example.
Yeah.
They do bowling nights.
Yeah.
I can't bowl. I have arthritis. I am not able to bowl.
Bit of a short-sighted option, really.
You know? I would like to see, and they do dances.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really something I can participate in to any great extent. So I'd like to see movie nights or a book club of some kind. I know there is a book club in the city that meets on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.,
Marianne's in church.
There's not that, but I can't get downtown. I'm in the burbs. I can't get downtown Sunday morning by 10 a.m. to go to discuss books, right? So there's just, some of it is just inaccessible to me.
Yeah.
And if it's inaccessible to me, it's got to be inaccessible to a whole ton of people just like me.
So
I don't know how do I get that group?
This actually leads into a question that I wanted to get on recording anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How did you date when you were younger? How did you meet people? Because
bars, obviously.
Obviously, because there's lesbian bars?
Well, I was in my first gay bar was a Kitchener, actually.
Okay.
And you had to knock on the door in the back alley and the little thing would open.
The little
slide would open.
The
like
little peekaboo window.
And they'd look at you and they'd kind of look you over. And if you looked like you might be
If you were wearing
gay,
plaid,
if you were wearing
plaid,
and they would shut it and they would let you in. And I went in and I'd never seen anything like it in my entire life. It was wonderful. And I sat at a table and I watched this gay thing happening all around. There had a couple of hundred people in there. Mm-hmm. And then this group of bikers came in. Bikers! Mm-hmm. Vests, leather, tattoos. And I thought, we're dead. Yeah. We're dead. This is going to be my last night on this earth. And then they all started dancing with each other and kissing. They were gay bikers. I'd never seen... And that was my first night in a gay bar in Kitchener, Ontario. It was wonderful. But there are these little places. It was the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. It was very early 90s. So there were these little places tucked away. You heard about them. Mm-hmm. And you would go there very quietly, right? So yeah, bars would be the big thing.
Lesbian debauchery.
Didn't have the internet. That wasn't... You didn't go online.
Right. Then, right. Well...
So, no, not really back then.
Technically, it was around, but not really.
I worked at a feminist rape crisis center.
I worked at a...
What does it attract?
Yeah.
Lesbian.
Mm. Yeah. I met one of my partners.
I was the volunteer coordinator.
Yeah.
I was out to myself, but not to other people.
Right, yeah.
And I was out long before I'd ever been with a woman. Mm-hmm. Okay. And... did the training course, and at the end of the training, the women would go around the room and say, I'm so excited to be on the crisis line. I'm so excited to do this, that, or the other. And one woman sat there and said, I've decided not to be a volunteer. I have other things that I'd like to pursue.
That was you.
That was me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And we were together almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
That was my first dating experience.
I had a woman kiss me. I was still married. It was in my marital home.
Ooh la la.
And she kissed me, and it was like the light bulb. And was it, I could have had a V8.
Like a little peck on the cheek, or was it like...
No, this was backed me up against a wall and planted on me. It was the best kiss ever. She turned out to be a right bitch, but
woman who identified as straight at the
that's
time.
How
so
I
mean, clearly she wasn't upper class.
Same thing happened to me. I was about 19 in a bar.
Oh.
And I spent a lot of time...
If you were at a bar at 19, the drinking age was 21.
Exactly. But
yeah. The same age, I know this.
It was 21 when I was 16, so not to worry.
And, lush.
I know. And she did the same thing, but in a bathroom stall.
Oh,
that's so sexy.
Yeah, really.
Oh, that's so sexy.
I mean,
I don't think bathrooms are sexy. They have poo smell. I wouldn't want to make out where there's poo smell.
No, there's no poo smell. Not in the 60s.
Not in the women's.
It was covered up by the pot smell. No, it was... Oh, that's sexy in the bathroom.
Oh, dear. I don't think... Yeah, I've had some interesting experiences. I came out in... so I realized I was gay in Britain.
Ah, yes.
And in...
As one does.
Yeah.
As one would.
Well, as a Brit, one would in Britain.
Yeah.
And I was...
Edward, of course.
And I was... Yeah. Where the hell was I? I was in South Wales. Now, to give you an idea of South Wales, it's very provincial.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you mean pastoral?
No, like...
No, provincial.
Like, as in the euphemistic term of slightly backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not like the province of.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, Welsh hick town.
That's most of Wales. I didn't feel very comfortable coming out.
There was
a lot of like very hyper masculine violence happening at the time. Mm. So like I remember being at a youth group and they essentially said the Never Have I Ever game. And they were daring each other to kiss each other. And
got
so uncomfortable that I almost like ran away and from that group. And it was very interesting. Actually, I did run away as a child, but it was when my mother found gay porn on the home computer. Now, as I mentioned when I described the dial-up situation earlier, every time you opened an image back in the day on any website...
It took an hour.
It would pop up on the recently viewed folder the start menu.
Did you blame Caitlin?
It's impossible, but like...
You were looking at porn?
Well, I don't know. I must have been 15, maybe? Like, it was 14 or 15.
And you were looking at gay, like, men?
Yeah. Well, like...
Oh, I don't know.
very twinkish men, you know.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And
young gentlemen.
Yes, like legal age, obviously, because it was porn.
Naked.
Yeah, broadly speaking.
They were naked.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all of the images were them in provocative positions. Okay. But the point is that
provocative or evocative.
Ooh. No, my mother at the time was working for Welsh Women's Aid.
Yes.
And as a result, thank you very much.
The WWA.
So the it was a women's shelter organization, yeah. And she's like, we can't really have these sort of images on the computer, and she had no issue with me being gay. Little did I know that my stepfather's brothers were also gay, or that a whole bunch of other people were gay. And she grounded me for these images, and I just had a breakdown, and I was so distraught, and I ran away. But I only had one friend, and I took the same route to get to this one friend's house every time I went there, and she literally just intercepted me on the way. Because I was so predictable that I was either right next door, because I was really friends with my neighbour,
yeah,
or I was like on my way to this one other friend I had across town.
And she knew the way.
And she literally just drove up and said, get in. And
yeah,
and then we moved to Canada. So I was never out in Britain. So I came out in Canada.
So you were in your middle teens when you move.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's huge. Yeah. That kind of a move in your mid-teens, that's huge.
Yeah, well, I came here when I was 16 or 17, yeah. So it was interesting. But yeah, so I came out in Canada.
And what part of Canada did you move to?
Rural Ontario.
Oh, how?
Yeah,
rural,
Tweed. Right?
Tweed.
You've driven through it. People drive through and wind up the windows and lock the door like that.
I think Children of the Corn was written in Tweed.
You don't slow down, but it's a very entertaining town. So we get there, and I had a good friend who, there was a youth group nearby, mm-hmm. in the nearby city. So my mother would drive me to this youth group, and we'd go and hang out. And so that's kind of where I first started to see other people, was at a youth group, which, you know, I suppose I was looking
back. Was it church related? No.
I was in Britain, I went to a church group that was very, in what the teens got up to, not very church faring.
No, that sounds like a normal church group.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds pretty right on there, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I'd love a top up.
We're going a little dry now.
Oh, that's fine.
So when we moved to Canada, we moved to Sudbury.
Oh, right.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Never seen snow in my life.
Oh.
Suddenly you can't get the front door open because it's a snow day. You know what a snow day was.
Where were you from before you went to Sudbury?
Nottingham.
Okay.
Nottingham.
Not too much snow there. Yeah.
No, I hadn't seen snow. There is now. I mean, yeah.
Sudbury is deep snow country as well.
So we actually moved Sudbury to Canada in 2004. So we moved.
Okay, this was 1963, but we won't discuss the difference.
We tried to move in 04. We only managed 4 months, mainly because it was the winter 4 months, and we chose Winnipeg as our go-to location.
Oh, my gosh.
So we've never seen, you know, in Britain, if a bit of ice forms on the ground, the whole city just shuts down.
Absolutely.
You know, we can't possibly allow children near frozen water. We all must stop what we're doing immediately. And I no word of a lie, an inch, and the whole country just stops. And we go to Winnipeg, and I remember my mother telling me, because in Britain, we'd go to school unless the radio told you it's a school day.
Right.
And the school is off. Otherwise, you go to school regardless. So it was in Winnipeg. There was a snowstorm outside, and snow was interesting enough. And then my mother's like, well, school's not cancelled, so off you go, there's 4 or 5 blocks. Go walk to high school. And it was -50 in the wind chill. Like my jeans froze into
stuck
a solid shape.
Yeah.
And it was, I got there and the teachers were amazed that anyone bothered to come. And I was like, well, the radio didn't say it was cancelled. And it was like, well, people would assume if the radio was giving health warnings about exposure.
Then again, Winnipeg, when it's 50 below, they're like, oh, it's a bit brisk. Like, it's a very cold part of the country.
We promptly went back to Britain and...
oh, you did?
We warmed up, for 2 years.
It was,
We went back, and then we came back in 09. So we were there in 04 for 4 months, and then back in 09 to move.
The year my brother was born, in the late 70s, my mother lived in Ville-Marie. It's one of the suburbs of Montreal. And the snow was so deep, she remembers having to jump out the second-story window to dig out the front door. This was normal. This was normal Montreal behavior at the time. Mm-hmm. And she was pregnant at the time, but she was not very pregnant. Okay. And it was... So there's a bit of a difference now. And well, I mean, to be fair, even now, even today, even when you bear in mind places like Moscow and Oslo and oh, bloody hell, what's the Helsinki, capital of Finland, Montreal, of cities in the world with more than 1 million inhabitants, does get the deepest snow. Wow. And it's because it's in the middle of a river. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of moisture around to turn into snow. And weirdly enough, also, the further you go north, the more likely you are to hit that weird weather pocket where it's too cold to snow, which it baffles me that there are Canadians who've only lived in Canada who are still not familiar with the idea that, like, if you look out the window and it's February and it's a clear blue sky and the sun is very bright,
it's minus 50.
You're going to die. It is too cold for clouds. Right. And nope. A lot of people still don't get it. They're alarmed every winter.
Oh, but lovely day. Oh, so sunny and bright.
Such
I agree with you.
Fools. But anyway. No, this was common practice when my brother was born, that you had to jump out the second story to dig out the front door. It didn't matter because there was, like, you know, 5 feet of snow, lots to cushion your fall, but